Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Welcome back to Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler. He's Lance Zierlein. Today's show, we're going to hit on my updated top 50. Who's rising? Who's falling? Who are some of the new names? Where does, maybe Lance and I, maybe we differ on a few players, maybe too high or too low. We're going to go through all of that. First, I want to touch on a little bit of news from around, the college football and NFL world that really affect the draft and the evaluation process. Several SEC games this weekend have been canceled, or I guess I should say postponed, at least at this point. We don't know if they'll be rescheduled, but all this is due to COVID. Georgia at Missouri, that's postponed. Alabama at LSU, A&M at Tennessee, Auburn at Mississippi State. All these games have been postponed. And, really, I think it's kind of like we're seeing a little bit of a trend here where several teams, once they lose a few games and the original goals kind of appear unattainable, a lot of these players, they're young players here we're talking about. They let their guard down. And unfortunately, it's kind of shaking up the schedule down the stretch in the SEC. So is that fair to say, Lance? I'm not sure.
Oh, I can tell you that that's what people around the NFL and people around the SEC are saying. Mm-hmm. Spoke to a friend of mine around at the SEC Network. And he's worried the college football is going to end up shutting down at some point because this is going to get worse and worse, because what they're seeing in the SEC is exactly what you pointed out, which are players have just either, like all of us, have the COVID fatigue, or they just say, look, I'm going to go do one of two things. Either I'm going to opt out. We'll see some players opt out and start. I think we're going to start seeing more of those guys begin to opt out and start training for the NFL draft, or you're going to see guys just taking more chances than they would normally. Because here's the thing. We didn't see this in Major League Baseball. We saw an early outbreak that hit a couple teams, and then they really got it together for the most part. This is happening in the NFL, in college football. I don't want to speak to the NFL. There's older players there, so obviously, and staff, and you send kids off to school, maybe they bring it back. Who knows? The college, though, it does seem pretty likely, especially based on videos that you see all the time and stories, right, about an LSU player, players going to the Halloween party, that they're just going to go and take chances because they just say, look, either they think they're bulletproof or they just don't care anymore the same way. So the problem is when that happens in mass, look at this. The SEC is, really, you're going to miss a bunch of SEC games. And some of these games, I think they're going to have a hard time making up some of these games. So This is going to happen in some different conferences. We know Wisconsin had back-to-back games that got canceled. And in the Big Ten, once they're over, they're over. They're canceled. You're not going to make those back up. So those are considered no contests. So we'll see how it goes. But I really worry that we're going to have a growing number of games that are postponed or canceled, not just in the SEC, but throughout college football.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And hopefully they get this figured out. The NFL, you figure a lot of these young guys, there's more on the line for them. Unless you're an established starter, if you mess up and you test positive and you let your guard down for one reason or another, your job could be in jeopardy. So, your livelihood, and there's just not that type of urgency, I guess, from college players, and it's tough. It's just a tough time for everybody, and hopefully, they can just get it figured out so we can, because a lot of people are affected. It's not just the teams, it's not just the players, these young guys. A lot of people are affected by this in a lot of different ways. So it's going to be interesting throughout the months of November and December to see how it plays out.
I want to expand on this just for a second. Certainly not minimizing as someone who, you know, as we talked about on the last one, I had mm-hmm. COVID just recently, and I certainly don't take it for granted, and I don't take it lightly. I know different people have different experiences with it. But I am curious, just to get into the practical side of what we do for a living, our draft stuff, how many tapes do you need? Like, I can get what I need for certain positions from a few mm-hmm. game tapes. For other positions like quarterback, it's not enough. Now, we can always go to 2019, but that is, and you know, we have to do that for certain players who have opted out, but it's really tough. I mean, I had to go back. I finished Walker Little. I had to go all the way back to 2018, and I saw some holes that I really was concerned about. Right. And then I saw one game in 19, and I saw a little more strength there, and I really wish he would have played in 2020 so I could have seen him on tape, because I feel like I'm not really sure who or what he is physically. With some of these players, I'm kind of curious, can you get what you need out of three games in a season?
Well, yeah, I think it's just a case-by-case basis because, you know, we've talked about it before. Ja'Marr Chase did not need to play another down in college football for us to know what he is. But you take a guy like Trey Smith, for example, at Tennessee, he's not having a great senior year. I mean, the tape that he's putting out there has not been very good. And we'll get to this later, but he fell off my top 50 just with his performance this season. And so he's a good example of a player who, you know, he needs to be out there to show, hey, I'm still belong in the top 50 discussion or even the first round discussion. And here's why. And, you know, what he's put on tape, that it has a lot of evaluators around the league a little bit worried about that transition. So it's tough. And another guy, and this kind of lets us transition into the next thing I wanted to talk about, was we have a lot of Senior Bowl invites going out and some accepted invites. And one of them is Jamie Newman, who opted out of this season, and a guy who had a productive year at Wake Forest last year and, you know, did some good things, transferred to Georgia. And, you know, this is going to be his chance to show, hey, I belong in the top 100 conversation and I'm a future starter and all this. But he opted out. And this now there's a ton of eyes on him at the Senior Bowl to see if he can kind of flip the narrative. And I don't know, can you do enough at the Senior Bowl, if you're Jamie Newman, to intrigue teams enough to convince them that, hey, I'm not an early day three guy. I belong in the day two conversation, and you know I'm worth that investment.
Yeah, I think that's the question. I do think it's a very smart move for him to play in the Senior Bowl. I don't think there's anything to lose. Look, a lot of quarterbacks don't look great at Senior Bowl. You're dealing with new wide receivers. Sometimes you can deal with some weather issues. Not always, but every once in a while. But I think Jamie Newman is a guy who you had mentioned it early, and after I finished writing him up, I knew you were exactly right. He just didn't show enough on tape to warrant an opt-out from a draft standpoint. From a mm-hmm. health standpoint, okay, that's fine. From a draft standpoint, there was still a lot that needed to be seen on tape. And so even though he doesn't have – I think a lot of players need to think about this. If they opted out of the season and they are graduates, then they really should consider the Senior Bowl, because this is going to pack the week full of players. And once again, we have to see how COVID restrictions work out and things like that. But it will be full of players – who are draftable prospects. And so you will get one-on-one matchups and you'll get battles in the team phase and in seven-on-sevens and things like this, where you will be able to show your wares against, you know, some of the better competition out there. And so it really will give teams a chance to see you on tape in 2020. It's not game tape, but at the same time, it's still very valuable to them.
Right. And you mentioned Walker Little. That's a player who has graduated, or he's on track to, at least. So he will receive a Senior Bowl invite. Now, whether or not he accepts, I don't know. And that's a player that needs to accept a Senior Bowl invite to go out there and prove what he can do, because we just don't have a ton on him the last 2 years. How did you grade Walker Little?
Well, so I finished him last night, and what I did was I watched all of 2018. I watched his one game in 2019, and I thought that he looked like, for me, well, I'll just pull up some of my notes right here. To me, he looks like a guy who has some core strength issues. He has a hard time getting guys off his edge once they get to his angle. He's got very good feet. He's athletic. I think strength is a big concern right now. He's an athletic player who has some technical stuff that he needs to work out. But the thing that concerns me most is his level of natural core strength. I don't see a very strong guy in the upper body. And so when big guys, you know, kind of get to his edge, he has a hard time pressing and extending them. And that's a big concern because if you're not strong enough, that's almost a deal breaker in the NFL. The problem is a majority of the tape I watched was from 2018 when he was 2 years younger. When I watched one game in 2019, I saw what I thought to be a little, I saw a better kick slide already in 1 year. And remember, guys improve over the course of their college career. I mean, it's natural. We're all going to improve from the age of 19 to 21. Yeah, you're going to improve. And so I saw a more fluid kick slide in that one game against Northwestern. I did see still some strength issues, but he looked like his body composure and his contact balance was a little bit better in that one game. So now I'm thinking to myself, okay, on tape I thought he looked like a third round projection, like a third round guy that you project to be bigger and stronger. I did not see a first rounder. I think he'll go in the second round because teams, and once again, maybe when he goes to a workout, he's 10 pounds heavier than he was in 2019. Maybe he's more muscled. This is stuff that happens naturally as guys grow into their body. So maybe there are some things that physically are going to help him. And let's say he plays in the Senior Bowl and plays well. Well, he's at a priority position, so he's going to shoot up. But I think when you just watch 2018 tape, and once again, this is 2 years ago, I mean, that's a guy to me who I would give like a 6'1 or a 6'2", which means good backup with a chance to become an eventual starter. So you are expected to eventually become a starter, but maybe an average to maybe slightly below average starter at tackle. And that's what 18 looked like compared to grown men who will be in the 2020 draft and grown men in the NFL. So now I got to figure out, man, I've got one game in 19. Can I extrapolate the jump from 18 to 19 and do it again from 19 to 20? And that's the hard part. So I've got to balance out 18 tape versus projecting his overall physical growth and strength. And that's, and as you know, Dane, that's, it's not a given that guys get strong enough. It's just not right. A given. Some guys just don't have that kind of core. So you can't just assume they can't, but you also can't assume that they're who they're going to be when they're 20 years old, because that's not accurate either.
Right, and that goes to the words upside and potential. And, you know, it's that's where evaluators have to really, you know, look into their crystal ball and try to best understand not just what they are right now, but what they're going to be in 2-3 years down the road. And, you know, some guys, they're tapped out. Some guys you think are going to get stronger and, you know, really develop more once they get into an NFL strength and conditioning program. But it's different for every player. And for Walker Little, I mean, this Senior Bowl is perfect for him. A guy that's barely played the last 2 years. Show NFL teams what, you know, how are you moving after the injury? Because that's the thing. Every knee injury is different. You know, we don't even know how he's going to be moving out there.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So, you know, it's there's so many unknowns with a player like this right now that I couldn't include him in my top 50. I think that he could eventually get there into the top 50 if, you know, we see him maybe move up a little bit throughout the process if he's able to, you know, get out there and show what he can do. And it's tough because in the current landscape of everything going on around the country, you have to take advantage of what's going on today. Like, you really can't focus on, you know, workouts in a few months because we don't know what's the combine going to look like. You know, what are personal workouts, pro days? What are these going to look like this year? We just don't know at this point. So if you have a chance to show NFL teams something today or tomorrow, if you have a chance to put something on tape, take advantage of that because we just don't know what the next few months are going to look like.
Yeah, 100%. You got to put something on tape because there's a lot of guys who really will be hurt by not having that tape. Opting out. You know, here's a guy who opted out, Kylan Hill. Mm. He hadn't really done a lot this year. To me, I wrote him up last year expecting him to go. I'm going to watch him this year on tape. I can't imagine it's going to be much different than what I saw in 2019. So I think who he was in 19 is who he's going to be. But I talked to, speaking of Paris Ford, I talked to an NFL personnel director yesterday, and he asked if I'd seen him yet. And I said, no, I haven't really watched him. He goes, you know, he offsets some really good tape with some really bad tape. And he said, that's the real problem for me, is it? And he goes, also, all I heard in the building was about what a great player, what a great teammate he is, and a lot of stuff like that. He said, but this looks like he quit on his team. Mm-hmm. Like he just said, that's it. Things aren't going well. I'm out. He goes, that really bothers me. That really bothers me. So I think there's going to be so many things at play that we've never seen in the past. We know last year's draft was highly unusual because no pro days. Well, almost no pro days. I was at the last one at Oklahoma. But not as many pro days, individual visits. Everything was done virtually. The draft was done virtually. Well, this year, the big difference is going to be players who have only had 1 year of tape will have, or even 2 years of tape, who are positional change type guys. We're going to see more projecting and guessing about upside than in any draft in the history of the NFL.
Yeah, it's really going to be interesting.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Few other Senior Bowl accepted invites I wanted to hit on. Ole Miss tight end Kenny Yeboah, Temple transfers, having a nice senior year. Penn State pass rusher Shaka Toney. He's a little undersized, but he brings the juice off the edge. Central Arkansas corner Robert Rochelle. If you haven't seen it, go to the Senior Bowl, their Twitter feed. They posted a video of Central Arkansas's head coach kind of announcing the invite to the team. And it was a pretty cool moment for him. Oregon corner Thomas Graham, he's in that mix as well. So some pretty talented seniors that we're going to hopefully get a chance to see in a few weeks here in Mobile. I wanted to pivot real quick before we get to the top 50. One rookie performance from Sunday I wanted to hit on. Tua Tagovailoa made his second career start. It just looked outstanding, leading the Dolphins to a win against Arizona in Arizona. Went toe-to-toe with Kyler Murray, played really well, finished 20 of 28, 248 through the air, two touchdowns. Took care of the football. I thought he'd really impressed with the mobility, that trademark twitch that we always talk about with his movements, his delivery, that really impressed us through the process. And it was on full display on Sunday. So, I think there was some initial pushback when the Dolphins benched Ryan Fitzpatrick for Tua, but not anymore. What were your thoughts on seeing Tua out there?
Thought he looked great. The first game, he didn't have to do anything. He was just okay in the first game. Ton of defensive help. Once again, it happened again. Shaq Lawson scoring a touchdown. But see, here's my thing with the Miami Dolphins. I believe that everything that you do as a general manager and as a head coach, at some point you have to decide we are pointing towards becoming a Super Bowl caliber team. And that is your goal, right? That's the end point. That's everyone's goal. And some teams actually are potentially on that path. And it's easier to get on that path if you're further back, like the Dolphins or the Arizona Cardinals were, or even the Bengals, because, it's you can make a lot of moves and there's a lot more wiggle room. If you were a team at the top, like the Eagles, right? Even you could say this about the Eagles last year. You really could have said it about the Texans, who we're seeing take a big fall back. There's a big difference between being in the mix and being on the road to competing for a Super Bowl. And I think that when you look at what the Dolphins' end goal is and how many draft picks they have this year, it was really smart. I get the idea of keep winning, keep a culture of winning. You could still do that with Tua if he starts winning, but Ryan Fitzpatrick is not your quarterback of the future. And so at some point, you need to turn to Tua to get him experience so that he's ready to hit the ground running next year when you have two firsts and two seconds in this year's draft and based on what you've had this past year. So I thought it was very smart. I understood the arguments against it, but to me, Chris Greer and Brian Flores are trying to build towards a championship. So let's see the guys playing. And to that point, I'm going to swing it back into college. You know, there's going to be just a guy here at University of Texas, Sam Ellinger. Sam Ellinger can come back for another year next year. But Texas has a talented quarterback named Hudson Card, who maybe is a little more dynamic than Sam Ellinger. You know, I don't know the answer to this, but would Texas want Sam Ellinger to move on so they can get younger guys moving up, or would they want that veteran presence back again for what, in essence, is a free year for college football players? I think a lot of colleges, Dane, are going to want older players to just move on so they can get the younger, more vibrant players up and start to train them up, because they'll have a potentially a 2 or 3 year run with these younger players.
Yeah, well, and we're gonna see plenty of transfers, that's for sure. If guys want to take advantage of that extra year, and it's gonna make it really tough on NFL teams trying to figure out exactly who's in this draft class and who's not. So hopefully, just from an accounting standpoint, the league is organized with how, you know, there's a clear deadline, just like the underclassmen, a clear deadline, and you have to decide if you're going to go back to school for another year, you're going to come out. That's something that NFL teams need to stay in front of. Let's get to the top 50. I want to hit on this, make sure we have plenty of time to touch on everything included in here. No surprises at the top. Lawrence and Fields, 1 and 2. You know, that's the way that, you know, things have played out. Trevor Lawrence remains the favorite, you know, even with him being out the last 2 weeks. Still the favorite to go number one. Justin Fields has looked outstanding. I give him a ton of credit, from not opting out to doing whatever he could to get on the field just because he wanted to show the world how improved he was in several areas. And so far, so good. He's done exactly that. But there's a new quarterback 3 in the mix, and that comes in at number 6 overall on the top 50 board. That's BYU Zach Wilson. So, I mean, he had maybe the toughest test this past weekend against Boise State, you know, the toughest test he's going to have this year. And he passed it with flying colors once again. You know, Lance, I know we've hit on Wilson before, but he just continues to impress. I got a call from Gil Brandt yesterday, and he left me a voicemail, and you could just hear the excitement in his voice. Did you see the first two series after halftime by Wilson? Whoo, boy. I mean, Gil was definitely excited about what he saw. So, yeah, I think that's a common theme right now around the league with Zach Wilson. He's an exciting player, and it's really fun to think about how that could possibly translate.
Yeah, and, you know, his arm talent was on full display against Boise. I mean, he made some throws that were just tremendous. And I think when you look at him from a size standpoint, very average from a size standpoint. He's not a prototype of what you would want. He's not 225 pounds, 230 pounds. I think he's a light 212 pounds. He's going to be right around 6'2", probably a legit 6'2". Mm-hmm. And I heard one comment I asked about him, and one comment I heard was he's kind of small. But you look at the arm, I mean, and that is a legit arm. I tell you, I watched Trey Lance. I didn't see the arm talent. Trey Lance looks like a guy who wants to be an arm talent quarterback, but he's really a rhythm quarterback. When you really study him long enough, he doesn't have the arm talent. A lot of throws, the nose will dive on the ball. They'll sink. They'll drop down. That's not Zach Wilson, man. Zach Wilson can flip it. And I think you're onto something here, making him your quarterback 3. I really do. Getting back to Justin Fields for 1 second, you know, I think another important thing, because people tend to have a tendency to say, okay, because this quarterback, like, I think it helped Kyler Murray's draft stock that Baker Mayfield had a good rookie season. Right. Here's a shorter quarterback from the Oklahoma quote unquote system, and he had a good rookie season. So it made it easier for the Arizona Cardinals to get behind the idea of Kyler Murray. And then maybe it was Kyler first and Cliff Kingsbury second. Maybe it's Cliff first, Kyler second. I don't know exactly how it played out. But I think you could look and say, wait, Dwayne Haskins, an Ohio State one-year starter who had all these tons of touchdowns, hasn't done anything in the pros yet. For whatever reason, you may point that towards. And I think getting a second year, it was really important. So he could distance himself against anybody making that comparison, Ohio State one-year starter. Because now when we see him in season 2, he's clearly improved. Mm. He's got great pocket mobility, and he has a real calm inside the pocket that I love. I think he's been extremely accurate, and I've been very impressed. To me, his tape over the last, like dating back to maybe the last three or four games last year, and then from what we've seen this year, I don't think you can say that Trevor Lawrence clearly has an advantage over Justin Fields on tape. I don't think. Now, physical advantages, yes. But tape advantages, I don't really think that's the case.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, I think it is tough because Ryan Day in that offense, and I've said it before, just how impressive that offense is and how that does help, you know, Justin Fields in certain ways. But, I mean, listen, he's showing a more of a willingness to work his reads this year. He's doing a better job of not focusing just on that first read and actually, you know, moving left to right and just being a little more precise with, you know, the placement of his throws. And it's been really fun to watch because he is maturing. And that's what you would expect for a guy who this is his second year in the program. And listen, nothing drives me more crazy than, and you know, this happened with Sam Darnold when he was coming out of USC. You get the comments, well, when's the last time USC produced an NFL quarterback? I'm just like, what? I don't understand what the decal on the helmet or the jersey color has to do with, you know, Matt Leinart and Sam Darnold. I mean, there's no similarities right here besides just where they come from. And, you know, with Dwayne Haskins and Justin Fields, I get it a little bit more because they're so close. In terms of when they've, you know, left Columbus. But at the same time, you know, Ryan Day has talked about how he's changed the offense from Haskins to Fields because they operate in different ways. They have different strengths as quarterbacks, so they don't run the same offense. And so it's, you know, I get that, you know, because I get it a lot on Twitter and elsewhere how Haskins, with what he's done at the pro level, but there's a lot of differences between these two quarterbacks. And yeah, I think especially coming back for the second year, it's just not a valid excuse to say, well, you know, Haskins hasn't worked out, so I'm going to ding Fields just because of that.
Yeah, and listen, NFL teams will do it too, and they do it in a positive way. If there's something that works out for them, it's called a copycat league for a reason. Mm-hmm. And some of the copycat leagues, I'll tell you a guy who's going to benefit. Let me go the other way, and it's a guy who is number 50 on your list, Mac Jones. Yeah. When Mac Jones from Alabama – now, remember, I'm going to lay it all out for you. Last year's tape for Mac Jones, it was fine, but in comparison to Tua's, nothing special. Mac Jones, the guy who came in this year and immediately is extremely productive for an explosive offense. I think his tape looks better. I think he's more decisive. I think the ball's coming out quicker, and he's really seeing the field well. He's got those white undersleeves, you know, the compression shirt. You know who else wore the white undersleeve compression shirt? Another guy in the SEC. I think that he could get a subconscious boost from Joe Burrow, yeah, where teams say, here's another guy. You know, the undersleeves on the shirt, the compression thing, I'm just mentioning that just because it's one of those things where you see a guy with dreads and you see another running back with dreads and like, oh, he reminds me of Steven Jackson. You know, it's these physical things can give you comparisons, and it's everyone does that. And all of a sudden you see a guy who's pretty mobile outside the pocket can run a little bit with Mac Jones. Same thing with Joe Burrow. Nothing, you know, came out of nowhere to throw up these huge numbers. Big time SEC program. You start to add it up. And I think some NFL teams could, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, saying, hey, maybe this is another Burrow situation. When really you have to judge each guy, as you mentioned, by, you know, everyone has to get their own judgment. But the comparisons in a negative and positive way are human nature, mm-hmm, and it will hurt some players and it will help others.
I think that's fair. And, you know, you did mention the fifth quarterback that did make it with Mac Jones. He's, you know, he's a guy where you watch some of his throws, and if his footing isn't perfect, if his base is not right, his ball will just die out there. And there are times, yeah, where his delivery's a little long. There's a little bit of a windup. You know, there's sometimes he feels pressure that isn't there. So, you know, he's far from this perfect quarterback, but he doesn't make mistakes out there. His decision-making is on point. The accuracy has been above average. And yes, he really benefits from that supporting cast, the offensive line, the targets, the running game.
Oh, yeah, sure.
No doubt about it. But at some point, we got to give this guy credit for going out there, making the throws, making the decisions, and being productive. And so it's just, it's really, really fun. And I want to give Sark credit too, because I think they're scheming a lot in that offense that really helps open things up. So it's a tough evaluation because of everything going right around him. But, you know, I think he deserves credit as well. And that's why I wanted to make sure he was included in that top 50 and, you know, above maybe some other quarterbacks that some other people are talking about. But just.
Yeah. Can I ask you about that? I noticed one quarterback missing and I was curious about Trask.
Yeah. And look, Kyle Trask has been, and I like Kyle Trask. I was talking about him over the summer. He was actually my quarterback four and over the summer, my top senior when I did my quarterback preview on The Athletic. So I like Kyle Trask. I kind of think he is what he is. And that's a big-bodied, cerebral passer who understands touch, understands timing down the field. There's things to like about him, but a couple things that just really bother me with him. There are times where it looks like he's just throwing a very heavy ball. He can't always rip it. And then also just the fact that he lacks mobility. And in today's NFL, when you're facing the speed off the edge, you have to be a mobile athlete and move around a little bit or you're going to be in trouble. So Kyle Trask to me is in that Mason Rudolph category as a prospect where he's somewhere in day two. He projects as a probably a backup who can maybe be a starter. But the production's been great this year for Florida. I think a lot of it's scheme-based. Against Georgia over the weekend, almost half of his yardage passing was to his running backs. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot to like about Kyle Trask. I don't want it to make it sound like I don't like him because he was my top senior quarterback over the summer, and that nothing has changed. I'm not giving him the big boost up the rankings based off of what we've seen this year because I don't necessarily think that that's going to translate to NFL production. Do you think I'm off here? Or what are your thoughts on the Kyle Trask?
I'm still perplexed here because I don't think he has the natural. I think he still is going to be a pocket quarterback. And isn't it funny to watch the issues that Tom Brady? And granted, he's 41 years old, but we just see so many pocket quarterbacks who really are just not. It's just they are so limited to their quickness of processing what blitz is coming and how well their offensive line and running back picks it up. And so I think that's a really interesting thing to get into is that I think Trask is going to be obviously more of a big pocket quarterback. And I don't know that I see a first round quarterback either. I've heard some people talk about that, but I have to get into more of a deep dive for him. I don't see Trey Lance as a first round quarterback. I didn't see Jordan Love as one either. And Jordan ended up sneaking in there. But Lance also is extremely young and inexperienced, and there's projection that has to happen with him. And so he's a tough one for me. I've got all my notes written, and I'm going to keep working on that. In your top 20, I notice you've got some pass rushers in there, and they're guys we've talked about before from Penn State, obviously Quiddy Pay, who had a pretty good game last week. Gregory Rousseau is going to be another difficult evaluation because he has 1 year, and it's really unusual because he switched positions, and then he got a lot of his production as a zero technique reduced rusher, which is not something he's going to do on the next level. I tell you, guy, that you have – number 18 that I'm really high on, and that's Rashawn Slater. Yeah. And you and I have talked about Slater early in the year, but I finally got to finish tape on him and watch him and write him up. It's hard to find true weaknesses on him. He's not the longest guy, so if you want to call him a tackle, he doesn't have the length of a standard tackle. And I don't think he has the pad level of what you'd love to see at a guard, so you could argue he's a tweener. But let me tell you, he's extremely well-versed. He's a very technically sound guy. He's extraordinarily strong. And the reps he had, and I know you've talked about this, but the thing that really stands out about the Chase Young matchup is that not only did he look confident and composed on every rep against Chase, he was one of the guys who could match power. Like Chase is just used to being able to overwhelm people with his size, strength, and length. And this is one guy who battled him head-to-head and really didn't seem intimidated by Chase Young's physical traits. Yeah. He wasn't intimidated in his play. And I really like Rashawn Slater's potential at either center, guard, or tackle. I'm really interested now. His arm length may be a shade under 33, so that's going to be a problem for him with NFL teams. But, man, he is a good football player.
He doesn't try to be something he's not. You know, like he plays within himself. He knows his strengths as a blocker, and he really taps into those. And it's really, really fun. And I talked to him a few weeks ago for the story I did that's up on The Athletic. And, you know, he told me that he's, you know, working out a little bit at center, a little bit at guard, just so, you know, he can have that in his toolbox. But he makes no bones about it. He says he's a tackle. Duke Manyweather, who's one of the best O-line trainers in the country, he's working with him down there in DFW area. And I mean, Duke says there's no question that he's a tackle. So it's really fun to watch. All I know, he's a good player. I mean, he is a starting level lineman in the NFL, you know, whichever position.
He reminds me of Jonah Williams. He's okay, a Jonah Williams to me, because you just tell me, well, maybe he plays guard. Some teams see him as a mm-hmm. center. He can play tackle, but he has short arms. I just know he blocks people. He gets people blocked. You can just draft him and figure it out, but just go get somebody who gets guys blocked. And that's what he is, and that's what I used to say about Jonah. But I also thought Jonah could play tackle. So,
right.
You know, I had a pretty good grade on him, and I'm going to have a good grade on – I'll tell you right now, I'm going to have a good grade on Slater.
Yeah.
Why don't you go down the rest, some of the guys that stand out on the rest of your list for the listeners.
Yeah, well, and Slater was my number two rated senior. Quiddy Pay, number one. Slater, number two. Devontae Smith from Alabama, number three. So, you know, we'll see if we get to see those three guys at the Senior Bowl or not.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I think some of the bigger surprises, you know, the biggest offensive riser from the preseason draft board was obviously Zach Wilson. The biggest defensive riser, Azeez Ojulari from Georgia, who a little bit of that tweener at 6'2", 245, but man, he's such a good athlete, and it shows in space, it shows when he's stringing out runs in the run game, it shows as a pass rusher with the way he's able to win the corner and beat blockers in different ways. So Ojulari, I think, has really, really helped himself this year. Still just a redshirt sophomore, but excited for him. Another, you know, a guy that I really liked over the summer. I graded him as a first round pick in my first draft board in August. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoa, the linebacker at Notre Dame. Anybody that watched that Clemson game on Saturday night saw the impact that Owusu-Koramoa makes on the team. And, you know, he's a little bit of a tweener. And, you know, I think the Isaiah Simmons conversation is going to, you know, we talked earlier about how guys can be affected by recent draft picks and things like that. Well, Isaiah Simmons struggling in Arizona, how is that going to affect Owusu-Koramoa? That's something that's going to come up. I have no question about that. But to me, he's that perfect overhang linebacker, that nickelbacker who is so explosive. He plays with power. He's so rangy and athletic. He can just – and the more he's out there, the more he seems to be learning and adapting and seeing things quicker. And so I he came in at number 15 for me. I think he's got a chance to go in the top half of round one. Another player that I'm pretty high on, who's a little bit under the radar, I would think. I don't hear him talked about a ton, but I think he's one of the top three corners in this draft, and that's Darian Kendrick out of Clemson, a five-star wide receiver who moved over to corner last year just because of depth issues. And I tell you what, he is an elite, elite athlete. And just the natural instincts that he shows, pretty impressive. So a guy that's really young at the position, needs to get better in terms of breaking down route combinations and just his overall technique with his pedal and things like that. But he's a big-time athlete, and he's able to make plays out there even though he doesn't fully know what he's doing just yet. So I think those are a couple players that I feel like I'm higher on than others. Christian Darrisaw, the tackle out of Virginia Tech, he's at number 20 overall, another player who I think is – not talked about nearly enough for what he brings. Another riser who I know you're very familiar with down at Texas, Joseph Osai, this is a guy that the foot is always on the gas. I mean, he plays so hard. The effort is outstanding. He's just a really, really good player who has worked himself into that first-round conversation.
You can see, it's interesting, you say his film gives off Justin Houston vibes. That's a great call because he does have some speed to power stuff that he can do, and he gets into you with pretty good length. He's not a tall, he's not like a 6'5" guy, but he's a longer frame player. And what's really interesting to me is you can see him figuring it out on the move. Like from game one against UTEP to now, you can see a different player. He is learning and processing. This guy's like a machine learning program or something where AI is just teaching him how to rush the passer, and his instincts are sharpening with almost every game. And he's starting to figure out how to set up tackles, how to hit his inside move. You can see a guy who understands now, and some of it, Dane, I don't know what you think, but I think a lot of pass rush is your level of confidence. It's like once JJ Watt figured out, and I'm going from his Wisconsin days to his early Texans days, once he figured out that he was stronger and more explosive than the guy in front of him, it's like a different level of confidence went off in his game. And I think, Osai, once you start having success and you start feeling like you're an ass kicker out there and like you can physically dominate somebody once you get to their edge, or that you've got the athletic talent, or sometimes it's just a matter of the thinking turns into reacting, and that's when the quote-unquote instincts take over. That's what's happening with Joseph Osai. I know he wasn't in your top 50 before the season, so that's a pretty big – I don't assume he was. That's a pretty big jump up to 24, but I think it's warranted.
Yeah, no, he wasn't. And part of that was he's changed positions this year, playing that jack role where he's able to be more of a designated pass rusher, and it really is a perfect fit for him. It really fits his strengths as a player, and he's – I kind of took a wait and see approach with him, knowing that he was switching positions, and it's certainly paid off. He's been terrific. One of the few, I think there were three Big 12 players on this list, so the SEC and Big 10 tied with the most, with both they both had 14. No real surprise there. I'm trying to think a few other, maybe, I think another player that's interesting is Nick Bolton, who, we talked about the lack of length with a guy like Rashawn Slater at tackle. Well, the lack of length with Bolton's really going to hurt him. But I mean, I don't know how you can watch him and just not love him as a football player. I mean, the way he plays, the play speed, the explosiveness, the way he hits, the instincts, the way he can diagnose things. Just a really, really fun player. He's not a very, he's not a tall, long player. And that's, different teams are going to look at that differently. So that's a tough one to peg right now. And a lot of these guys, because of the way the season has played out, it's tough to really, that's why I try to wait until November to do my top 50 update. And especially this year when some teams have only played a couple of games, it's hard to get a feel for him. Sean Wade, for example, out of Ohio State, a guy we've talked about several times before. He's only had three games as an outside corner with very mixed results. That Penn State game was really tough for him. But if, he can right the ship the rest of the way and play much better, then Sean Wade will be just fine. And so right now he's at number 32 overall. But, how he plays out the rest of the year is really going to ultimately determine if he's going to be a first-round pick or not. So, I think the same thing with like a guy like Rondale Moore, who had one of the best freshman seasons we've ever seen at wide receiver, but missed most of last year and hasn't been able to get on the field yet this season. And Purdue's been pretty quiet about that situation. So hopefully, you know, we get a chance to see him back out there soon, or, you know, I don't know how you could really justify taking him in the top 40, maybe even the top 50 picks, just with everything surrounding him. So yeah, a lot of players right now, there's a lot of question marks that we don't have answered. You know, we're kind of wondering, you know, there's some missing pieces of the evaluation, missing puzzle pieces that we just don't know yet. So this top 50 list will continue to evolve and grow. And, you know, I know it's kind of like a living document.
Yeah, but I like one of the things that I think is interesting. If you need pass rush, which last year wasn't a great year, this is going to be a better year for pass rush.
Yeah.
This is going to be, once again, what appears to be, depending on how guys come out or not, it's not going to be as heavy on the top end as last year.
It's ironic.
But it's going to be a little deeper. Yeah, it's a little deeper also at offensive tackle, where you have more offensive tackle prospects in your top 50 than most of the draft years that we've seen. Now, once again, you're not going to have the big name like the big four from last year, but I do think you're going to, if you have a tackle need, you're going to have some guys that you can lean on this year. And then this is also going to be a year where I think you have a little more linebacker help and corner help as well. Depending on who comes out, there are some corners. It's going to be similar to last year's corner draft, I think. But I'm not sure about the depth. I'm not as knowledgeable about the entire depth. That's going to take time for me to go through all the tape, and that's certainly a process for me. But really, your top 50 is a great catch-up point for anybody who wants a head start with some of the draft prospects that are out there and the guys you need to be focusing on. Dane's list is fantastic.
Well, and you make a really interesting point how, you know, we had Myles Garrett and Joey Bosa and then Nick Bosa and then Chase Young. You know, we've been spoiled with these pass rushers at the top. And this year, we don't have a top 10 slam dunk pass rusher, but the depth that we could possibly see in the teens and then the back half of round one is really interesting. And, you know, at tackle, we had five tackles drafted top 20 last year. This year, Penei Sewell's the only one who I think is a slam dunk offensive tackle in the top 20 picks. But, you know, we've got good depth with Slater and Darisaw, and, you know, we'll see if a Walker Little can move up. You know, Sam Cosmi. Let me get your opinion real quick on Sam Cosmi. Is he, you know, I know you watch the Longhorns quite a bit. Is he a guy that you that has caught your eye, that has maybe helped himself, hurt himself this year?
I think he's getting better. Reminds me a little bit of some of the same issues Ezra Cleveland had from Boise, to where he's got the foot quickness and he can slide and mirror. You know what? Once again, it's going to be strength. It's going to be dealing with dealing with the bullies of the league, who, if they sense that you are a little weak, they will try to bull rush you, and they will try to, you know, get your inside edge by maybe giving you an outside move and then just trying to power through your inside post. And so, to me, it's going to be, is he going to play into that body type? I don't know that he's a guy that can carry 315. That's the concern for me, is can he maintain enough weight in the NFL? I think right now he looks like a second rounder. I think you have him pegged right now. To me, he looks like a second round prospect. And what we get with tackles is, if you're a second round prospect with tackles, you've got some pretty good tape, but there may be some physical deficiencies, whether it's foot quickness, whether it's a little bit of strength, whether it's arm length. A lot of times, because if you've got those things, then you tend to get pushed into the first round. Even if you're not a first round talent, it's such an important position that you'll get a push into the first round. Because at this point, though, I think there's legitimate concerns that could cause him to fall into the day two realm. So I think that could be what we're dealing with Walker Little, with obviously with, and Walker's going to be a strength issue too.
Guy like same thing goes Liam Eichenberg with from Notre Dame. Like he's
Liam Eichenberg. Yeah,
he's kind of in that mix too. A guy that, you know, makes a few too many mistakes for a redshirt senior, but at the same time, he's a rock solid player. He's a solid athlete, not much of a drive blocker, but I think he's strong enough at the point of attack. I don't know if I'd classify him as a technician, but he stays pretty tight with his hands. And so, I mean, there's a lot to like about these tackles. It's just there's maybe some – you can poke holes in each one of them, and so it's just trying to figure out how to stack them. It's an interesting group.
I think with Eichenberg, the thing you're going to have with him – and Cosmi to an extent. Cosme's going to have plenty of tape, but – the fewer unknowns, the more comfortable teams are with tackles. Like, if you know that Eichenberg can withstand, can get out of his stance and play in an outside zone scheme, does he have enough, you know, does he have the ability to combo and work up? Of course he does. That's what Notre Dame does, is they put you in a variety of different schemes. Is he going to push people off the point of attack? I think he's more of a, maybe a little bit, he's in the Mike McGlinchey mold, where McGlinchey wasn't, now McGlinchey was a better drive blocker than Eichenberg is, but I think Eichenberg, a team may look at him and say, you know what? We know what we've got. He's not going to be perfect, and he has some deficiencies, but we feel like, as you mentioned, he's rock solid. We know who we have here, and he can help us in a pass pro, and he's, you know, he's going to be technically sound. So those kinds of players, a lot of times, certain teams will say, let's just get a solid guy we can stick on the right side, and let's be done with it. Yeah. So that's where he could help himself. And of course, we're going to hear about some different names that, you know, end up popping up late from some smaller schools as well. So I'm excited to see your next 50 and see how that morphs as the season goes.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a low ceiling but a high floor type of prospect.
Those are good. Hey, singles and doubles are important too.
There you go. Perfect. That's a good way to end things today. You know, hopefully you go and check out the top 50 list. It's up on The Athletic right now. And actually, I'm coming out with an article tomorrow that goes over the 10 players that fell out of the top 50. And I kind of go line by line on those 10 players, kind of discuss why they did and, you know, kind of where we are with their prospects. So that'll do it for today. You can find Lance on Twitter at Lance Zierlein. I'm at DP Brugler. Please subscribe, rate, comment. We really do appreciate that. And we will talk to you next week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.